It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
They have this panther sound effect that is just the cheesiest, stupidest sounding thing. Big voice guy going, "Panther goal scored by Sam Reinhart."
Where'd you get that thing?
I trapped it. Been keeping it in my bathroom at the motel, feeding it old pizza.
It's Mike Shope.
If you're calm, that wondrous big cat will be calm too. But if you're scared, that beautiful death machine will do what God made it to do, namely, eat you with a smile on its face.
And the Bulldog. On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Really happy you've chosen to spend part of your Monday with us here on WGR. Us being made up of Zach Jones and myself. I am the Bulldog. Mike Shope has the week off. Joining us right now on the West Hur Hotline is a man who I shall introduce this way. When the Bills' backup middle linebacker leaves practice today with a calf strain, there's only one guy we're going to call, and that's Ian Harditz from Fantasy Life. Ian, it's Chris. Mike's not here. I hope that's okay.
No, man, great to be back. I will say back many, many years ago, I was actually, sitting up playing linebacker myself. That's where they put the guys in who can't catch well enough to play offense. So hope he's okay.
Right. Seriously, though, James Cook, the news starting yesterday, it looks like a hold-in has begun here. It's early. Maybe this works itself out in the form of a new contract. Maybe it works itself out in the form of him realizing he doesn't really have that much leverage, if any, and, he voices his displeasure for a few days or maybe even a few weeks, but eventually comes back in. What does this do to a player who certainly, beyond Josh Allen, is probably the top fantasy target the Bills have?
Yeah, certainly not ideal. Wouldn't exactly call it a surprise. I mean, James and his brother Dalvin have kind of been hinting at this throughout the entire offseason. I will say where it's a little bit different than what the Commanders are dealing with Terry McLaurin's situation. The Bills don't really have a ton of that cap space, just actually lying around at this point. Certainly made plenty of big moves under the assumption that Cook was going to be sitting up for them this year. So really, again, unfortunate. I would like to think that Cook is going to do what most of these hold-ins, holdouts end up doing, and that is sitting up and playing. But at a minimum, guys, like, could they at least give him some extra incentives, in the contract to hopefully make a little bit more money? Because, again, I just want to see the guy get out there. As much as Ray Davis and Ty Johnson do well with their work, I mean, man, that AFC Championship game, James Cook sure as heck looked like one of the best players in that entire field.
He did, but yet that there's a – I mean, we're way in the weeds on the Bills here, obviously, Ian, more than I might guess someone like yourself might be. He's not on the field at the end, though, because that's pass blocking time, and he's playing under 50% of the snaps. That's a part of the reason why I would think the Bills – why I would be, as an observer, reluctant to pay him a top of the running back market contract, because he's – He's in a timeshare that doesn't even equate to him playing 50% of the snaps.
I hear you, and I do think there's something to be said about not devoting this super large percentage of your salary cap to the running back position. That's where this whole idea of, running backs don't matter in today's NFL comes from. Like, they absolutely do matter, but when we have this rather arbitrary salary cap, you do have to go out of your way to, again, only devote a certain percentage of that cap to each position. It's not like college offenses, Ryan Day, Urban Meyer back in the day. It's not like they're just willingly taking three-star athletes over five-star guys because the position doesn't matter. So, again, I think it's an unfortunate situation. If you had to, pick and choose who you're going to pay, okay, I guess James Cook, could be someone on the outside looking in. But, man, you just gave Josh Palmer, okay, Josh freaking Palmer, $30 million plus, and you can't hook up James Cook a little bit more. Like, that's kind of where I draw the line.
Right, I hear you. Ian Harditz, Fantasy Life Show. You're still doing the stuff on Fubo. Can I find you there once I get ready for my fantasy drafts? Is that content still rolling out?
Sure can, man. The Fantasy Life Show, Monday through Thursday, 5 p.m. Eastern, trying to be your guys' one-stop shop for all things fantasy. Maybe have a little fun along the way.
Love it, man. Yeah, that's why you're one of our favorites here. How much would you – maybe let's try it this way. If James Cook were not here, for whatever reason, he leaves, he's so mad, he takes his ball and goes home, or, I don't know, the Bills find a way to facilitate a trade or something to a team that wants to pay him more of a market rate contract, what would that do to Ray Davis's fantasy stock? Would there be an assumption that production would rise to the level close to what Cook gave you last year, or is that too much?
Man, I think we'd see him instantly enter that top 20 conversation. We got some older heads like Alvin Kamara and James Conner. I just know how thirsty a lot of this fantasy community is for the next big young thing. And Ray Davis, man, based on that one-game sample we got last year, does fit that mold. Now, certainly Ty Johnson going to continue to be involved, and for good reason. That dude just averaged the most yards per touch of any running back in the NFL last year, if you make your sample size small enough. But we did get that one game, I believe Monday night against the Jets, where basically 23 of the 27 backfield carries and targets did wind up going to Ray Davis. And it seemed, you know, clear as day that that was their plan. Funniest note, I think, was before the game, the one that, you know, beat reporters doing their job just kind of brought up how Ty Johnson was the first one going through warmups. And he was. He even took the first snap of the game for 9 or 10 yards and then barely got to touch it after. So, again, it's just a situation where, no, I don't think Ray Davis is as good as James Cook. But if we are, you know, just able to say, hey, he's going to have pretty similar volume, maybe even more because now the backfield is going to be condensed to two guys instead of three. It's just a matter of, hey, that many touches and what figures to once again be one of the best scoring offenses in the NFL. So really going to be hard to rank that guy too low.
We did also get some bad news from the Bills on offense at the receiver position. It's been a tough summer so far. Nothing season ending for anyone, thank God, so far. But maybe the most serious sounding injury happened to maybe the most important guy, at least the most bankable guy, and that's Khalil Shakir on Friday night. Ian, high ankle sprain and week to week is how the team is terming it. So we'll see. We know how that sort of injury can tend to linger. So with Shakir now on the shelf, what do you make of the receiving core? Was he the leader in the clubhouse as far as fantasy drafts go? And what happens now? Does Elijah Moore's stock go up?
Yeah, Shakir 100% was going the earliest. Now, it was still a situation where, when, again, you're ranking these guys, he was usually in most people's wide receiver 40 to wide receiver 45 range, which is a far cry from what we're used to dealing with here. I mean, Stephon Diggs, obviously a top 10 option for the 4 years he spent there, but even Gabe Davis, especially after that just incredible performance against the Chiefs, I mean, he was being ranked inside the top 30. So one of my reasons this offseason for really getting behind both Khalil Shakir and Keon Coleman was the reality that we don't even have to pay Gabe Davis prices to get these dudes on the fantasy squad. So, unfortunate. I would say that as much as, you know, a lot of fantasy people have this horrible taste in their mouth, you know, drafted Christian McCaffrey last year, knew he was injured, and then it just snowballed and becoming something even worse. But for every one of those, there are other situations like Josh Downs, for example, who had a similar high ankle sprain to preseason, missed a game or two to start, and then went on to do big things. So, you know, cautiously optimistic that we are going to see Shakir out there sooner rather than later based on the timeline we have right now. I'm with you. It does sound like Elijah Moore could be the next man up, but just looking at this, you know, Bills wide receiver 4-9 depth chart, man, it's like a fever dream out here. Just 2019, 2020 sleepers in the fantasy world. We got KJ Hamler, LaVisca Chenault hanging out there. Nice. You know, I'm a Columbus, Ohio man myself, so I love me some Curtis Samuel. How about we throw more passes to Terrell Shavers, man? 69 yards per target for his career. Throw that dude a couple more.
Well, you are right. There are guys here. I know this from, of course, being in these conversations with guys like yourself, but just being in a room for 20 hours a week with Mike. Those names you mentioned there, Elijah Moore may be at the top of the list. Were you an Elijah Moore, I don't want to call you a fanboy because we don't know each other that way and that could be taken the wrong way, but were you like one of these fantasy people that just thought, Elijah Moore, man, he just needs an opportunity?
A truther, if you will.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, look, I wasn't completely down on the guy, but it was one of those things, and we kind of catch ourselves doing this throughout the months, where it's like, well, if you just look between weeks 3 and weeks 9, you know, excluding the second half here, and, you know, only accounting for this many targets, then Elijah Moore is the wide receiver 8 or whatever. So he did flash a lot as a rookie in that Jets team. In his defense, if you had to kind of go across the NFL and say, okay, what have just been the most desperate, like unusable, unwatchable passing offenses the last 25 years, you're going to see the Browns and the Jets up pretty high. So certainly, you know, a chance for him to finally play with plus quarterbacks for really the first time in his young career. And there's a guy that, again, despite not putting up big numbers in Cleveland, was at least good enough to still be going out there and getting triple-digit targets. One of many guys who was certainly putting up better numbers with James Winston under center. Too bad that man can't get a starting job with the other New York team. But, yeah, man, I think with Elijah, where are you going in drafts right now? Just the very end. If you want to throw a dart out there, I'm not going to say no.
Yep. Ian Hardis from the Fantasy Show, Fantasy Life Show, excuse me, on the Western Hotline here on WGR. You mentioned Keon Coleman in that receiver pecking order, and I don't know, for what it's worth, it's not worth a whole lot, I don't think, but one day last week, I asked, you know, my audience here, if you had to bet on someone to ascend to like a 60 catch, 6 to 10 touchdown level in the pass catcher department for the Bills, that includes your tight ends here, like who would you want to bet on, you know, beyond Shakir, who I think is pretty bankable, assuming his health is in order, at what he gave you last year. And because the drop-off was pretty big. I mean, Shakir had like 70-something catches. The next highest might have been 44 on the team. They had a bunch of 30-catch guys. And so I'm wondering if someone's going to ascend. My bet would be on Coleman going into year two. I don't think the skill set has really changed, but perhaps there's a little more nuance to his route running, and maybe he learned enough in 1 year. And I just think the opportunity is going to be there for him if he can stay on the field.
Yeah, I mean, when they drafted him, it was widely known that, okay, this is a bit more of a project than your typical wide receiver, but obviously he was still talented enough to get that near round one draft capital. He's 22 years old, okay? Not everyone can be Malik Nabers or Brian Thomas Jr. in his life, the NFL on fire pretty much the second they step out there. I really don't view last year as a sort of major disappointment that a lot of people were making out to be. Maybe, again, relative to the Ladd McConkeys of the world. I know it hurts to see him go a few picks after and wonder, you know, what could have been there. But for me, it was just impressive to see Keon show up, not one, but really two different elite traits out there. I knew that the contested catches were something that he absolutely thrived on. I mean, obviously, college highlights at Florida State, even going back to Michigan State, dude was, you know, just all over the place making these incredible snags. But the yards after the catch stuff, man, was actually what really impressed me. It's really unfortunate he had that hand injury when he did, because, man, those Titans and Seahawks games really did seem like he was coming out of the shell. But Next Gen Stats has a cool kind of metric. It's called yards after the catch above expected per reception. So they're able to basically chart what a guy is expected to be able to get in any given catch. He was number one among all wide receivers last year. Man, just the company that has managed to accomplish that really is incredible. I mean, Deebo Samuel, Jalen Waddle, DJ Moore, A.J. Brown, those are the only other guys other than Keon to actually lead this metric since 2018. So, again, we already saw Josh kind of have that epic Keon's down there somewhere mindset, both in the red zone and these deep balls. And then with no more Amari Cooper and Mac Hollins, I think the projection you gave is fair. I'm not trying to say Keon's going to step in and put up these 1,300 yards and 12 touchdowns like Diggs, but at a minimum, man, I think he could be closer to what we're all hoping Gabe Davis could be, at least in the regular season.
Yeah, so you sound pretty bullish on him. I'm encouraged to hear that. So
yeah, I've been drafting him a lot, man. He goes outside like the top 50 guys as well. So it's, you know, I always talk about opportunity costs in fantasy football. I mean, some of these guys, Shakir, for example, I mean, you're going to be taking him next to some legit starting running backs or some high-end quarterbacks and stuff. But by the time you get down to Keon, it's a situation where, like, yeah, I'm going to bet on the guy that has a chance to beat Josh Allen's wide receiver one when it's him versus these dudes.
Yeah. One player who I was reluctant to get on board with for that idea, that question, ascending to 60 catches, 6 to 10 touchdowns, even though he eclipsed the reception number in his rookie year, is Dalton Kincaid, coming off an injury-hampered second season. I feel like last year at this time, if we'd have been talking to you on August the 4th, Ian, we would have been talking a lot about Dalton Kincaid. How are you feeling about him going into year three?
You're not kidding, man. He was going legit, just kind of fantasy average draft position consensus, tight end five or tight end six last season. Everyone just really latching on to that first round draft capital, still pretty wide open offense post Diggs. So, you know, in his own right, the injuries weren't exactly ideal for him. It did seem like maybe those had something to do with it, but I just go back to it, and as someone that really does try to watch, you know, every play from every game if possible, like, do you guys even have more than one or two key good memories from Dalton Kincaid over the past 2 years? Because I remember him pointing at those Lions defenders after making the catch. That was a lot of fun. Maybe he had that seam ball against the Patriots, but just haven't exactly been watching these games going like, oh man, there's Dalton Kincaid. What a sick route. What a sick yak play once again. So honestly, I even thought Dawson Knox in the first year or two of his career made slasher plays here and there. So all that to say, there is some good with Kincaid. One stat that a lot of people like to talk about in fantasy circles is targets per route run. routes are a larger sample size, so guys that generally are able to earn a lot of targets on a per-route basis are pretty good bets in fantasy land. And last season, he was second in targets per route run among 31 qualified tight ends. He was actually eighth in PFF receiving grade, ninth in yards per route run. The problem was the passer rating when targeted plummeted. So
yeah,
it's really weird to talk about anyone in Buffalo or even Kansas City. You know, Xavier Worthy's kind of in a similar boat, where it's weird when you have arguably, probably, I think we can agree, the two best quarterbacks alive right now playing for these teams, and then do anything close to criticizing them. But to be fair, guys, Kincaid's uncatchable target rate from the powers that track these sort of stuff was one of the worst in the league. So, again, maybe it was more so Kincaid's fault, wasn't exactly on the same page with Josh, whatever the issues might have been. I just do think that there is a bit more meat on the bone here, even if we don't see him necessarily have this 120-target season. So I always say, don't hate the player, hate the ADP. And again, a guy that was going top six position last year, you can now get as a true late-round dart, man. He's going like tight end 13, tight end 14.
Yeah, that lack of success targeting Kincaid was a really weird one. And, you know, I think, you know, there's either, it's one of two things. Either he wasn't healthy. I mean, it could be one of two things. It could be 25 things that neither of us have even thought of. But maybe he wasn't healthy enough, and therefore the timing was off just a little bit. Or, I don't know, you know, maybe Allen just, that's not a position, that's not a player in that part of the field that he's maybe ready to exploit, which sounds crazy for as well-versed as he is. That's what you're saying. To criticize him might be, it's not like a heretic, but I don't know. It's just a weird thing that they were as off as they were as often as they were.
Yeah, and honestly, the same thing I was kind of bringing up with Keon. Like, it's not the wildest thing in the world to see tight ends take a little bit to break out in today's NFL. Again, we've been spoiled recently. Brock Bowers, Sam LaPorta have literally had two of the most productive rookie seasons that we've seen at the position in NFL history. So, I mean, if Kincaid, again, just really starts to rise year three, year four, it really wouldn't be all that shocking, again, in the grand scheme of things. But I, like I'm sure many of the other listeners who have been playing fantasy for any amount of time, have been hurt by that same sort of mindset with Kyle Pitts over the years.
So right.
Hopefully Kincaid doesn't go down that path.
Right. Ian Harditz, the Fantasy Life Show is where you can find him, and at iHarditz on Twitter. You're a great follow on Twitter. The self-deprecation and the jokes about all these things, they totally work for me anywhere. I always love someone who can appear to not take themselves all that seriously, and so really works for me. You mentioned the Chiefs. You mentioned Xavier Worthy there in the course of talking about the Bills, and that's a team, it's been a couple years, especially last year, like the explosiveness of the offense, the passing numbers overall were down, they were injuries, of course, Rashee Rice, Hollywood Brown missed the whole year. Worthy was a rookie who kind of came on late in the year, kind of the way Rice did the year before. I feel like I want to be bracing for kind of a return to form, a little bit of Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes going, oh, you don't think we know how to be explosive anymore? I might be fearing a big Chief offensive season incoming. What do you think?
I can see it, man, because, again, a lot of the reason for us hoping that last year was going to be more so the return to form that we saw in 2022 and obviously the years before that when Tyreek was there was the fact that, okay, we had year two Rashee Rice. They spent a first-round pick on the speedster Xavier Worthy, and even they had Hollywood Brown in there, who, when he has managed to stay healthy, has been a pretty darn good NFL receiver. So when you, again, didn't have Hollywood until, like, week 15, when Worthy, who, yes, you know, started to play well late, but really wasn't living up to that hype for the first 2 or 3 months of the season, and then Rashee Rice, you know, taken out by friendly fire, unfortunately, Mahomes himself in week 4. So it's just a matter of, again, maybe not having the guys and the firepower that are used to seeing. So, you know, to the Chiefs' credit, they were still a bad 60 minutes of football away from racking up their third straight Super Bowl. And as much as the explosives weren't there, it really was still this, you know, death by a thousand paper cuts sort of offense. I mean, as bad as, again, the explosive pass and even run rates were, their success rates, which is, again, just kind of keeping the offense on track, you know, converting those first downs on third and shorts and things like that, they were still near the top of the league over there. So overall, though, man, I do struggle to get too behind Mahomes in these options. I mean, the defense over these past years has been so much better that I just don't think they've had to play that, you know, same sort of high-flying brand that obviously was so fun to watch in 2018, 2019. So the saddest stat I think I've come up with this entire offseason, though, is Mahomes having the single lowest average target in the NFL during the past 2 years. That's an honor, you know, an honor as I use my finger quotes here. Something that we used to make fun of Daniel Jones for all the time, but with Mahomes, not quite as fun.
Right. Now the stat can't possibly mean as much if Mahomes is right, ranking badly in it. A couple more things on them, if you don't mind, Ian. Where are you at on Travis Kelce at this point?
So, obviously, he was a shell of himself last year. It was funny. He had that Texans divisional round game where it looked good, had over 100 yards, scored a touchdown. And then the Bills and Eagles were like, nah, we're not going to let that come close to happening against us these next two rounds. But, look, it wasn't pretty, all right? You can look at yards per target, per reception, his yak after the catches. I mean, you're in bad shape when you're a tight end. You broke fewer tackles than Zach Ertz across an entire season, okay? So, again, not trying to say that Kelce was by any stretch good last year. But he still ended up scoring the sixth most fantasy points per game at the position. So this was a guy, I think, from 2017 to 2023, he scored number one points among tight ends 5 of the 7 years or something insane like that. So, again, it's a relative drop-off from that. And if you draft him as a tight end 3 overall last year, you were disappointed in the performance. But we are getting a dip now in the kind of ADP that's associated with Kelce. He's now being priced as more so that tight end 7, tight end 8. And if we are going to see, again, Rashee Rice have to serve a bit of a suspension, I do think that could open up, the sort of volume again that managed to get him there last year. So, again, I certainly think he's way closer to wash than he is to being, still a just lethal talent at this point in his career. But that was kind of the case last year, too, and we still got some fans.
Right.
I always say style points don't matter in fantasy football, man. We just want that ball.
Right. How about their backfield? We all saw Pacheco was not really the same coming off the injury. That doesn't mean that a full off season of work couldn't get him back to being that back. But how do you see the Kansas City back? Kareem Hunt is still back. I'm not sure that's a good idea. What do you think of their backfield?
Yeah, they got Elijah Mitchell there from the 49ers. Breshard Smith has some truthers out there, just like seemingly every rookie running back this year. But, that's the way the draft works. Everybody loves everybody. So, whatever. I'm not going to really know that good vibes. But, look, I've kind of gone back and forth on this throughout the offseason. So, on the one hand, Pacheco, those first two games before he got injured last year, the dude went out there and had 42 combined carries and targets. The season before that, he did actually turn in top 15 numbers in terms of PPR points per game. So I would like to believe that now a healthy version of Pacheco is going to resume that workhorse role in an offense that, again, with how much they love screens and obviously feeding them near the goal line, could bring out the best in them. But, as much as Kareem Hunt certainly wasn't the same guy last year, hasn't been the same guy the last few years, I do think that there is going to be a team out there that remembers the good days and is going to use them a bit more than they should, probably would be Andy Reid and the Chiefs. So, again, throwing guys like Smith and also potentially Mitchell, if he can stay healthy for once, I think there's enough concern where, again, we can't exactly fire up Pacheco as one of these guys that were going out of our way to draft in the early rounds. But the good news is some of this uncertainty I'm talking about has led to him being priced more so as just like RB27, RB28, depending on where you're playing. So I do think, if we kind of have the fantasy football genie say like, hey, is there one sort of like snap count for like a position group that you could look ahead in time and see in week one? This Chiefs backfield will be up there, man. Because again, drafting Pacheco where he's going, I could see us by week two saying, oh yeah, great, 20 combined carries and targets. We are looking at legit RB1. Or Kareem Hunt's going to chart out there at the goal line. We're going to see Breshard Smith out there on long third downs, and all of a sudden, he's an unusable player. So one of the more interesting backs out there, I do think, though, that range of outcomes, exactly what you should be looking to target if you are doing one of these zero RB strategies, loading up a wide receiver.
Ian, thank you so much for the time. Appreciate the work. I mean everything I said earlier about enjoying you as a follow. And keep it up, and we'll talk again, I'm sure, once the season gets rolling.
For sure, man. Appreciate all that. Go Bills.
That is Ian Harditz, the Fantasy Life Show. If you're a Fubo TV subscriber, you can find that there. I mentioned this, I think, maybe a year ago. Just scrolling through, looking for sports content. No games were on. I'm like, oh, what's this? These little vignettes about these teams. Like, oh, my God, I know that dude. I had never seen him on TV, but there he is. Anyway, it's a lot of good content there, and I like the presentation a lot, which is one of the reasons we looked him up today. All right, we'll hit up a timeout here. How vital do you think James Cook is to the overall operation here? We know what window the Bills are in, and Cook has begun a hold in. How worried are you about it? 803-0550. We'll fire up the phone lines again as we get back into it after this commercial timeout. Mike is away today along with Zach Jones. I am the Bulldog, and this is WGR.